We're going to have a conversation, and then when it's all done, I'm going to play back the microcassette and type it, and then I'll mail it to everyone.
Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to episode 166 of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop, and I'm here with my co-host, Diami Plotke, of the Penultimate Woodshop. Tonight, we're talking to the Wood Whisperer himself, Mark Spagnolo. You may know him from such things as end grain cutting boards, abandoning a dream shop in the seventh level of hell, or woodworkers fighting cancer.
It's all very true.
Oh, that was good.
It isn't it?
Yes, that's a great way to sum me up. Thank you.
Beginning, middle, and ongoing.
That's, yeah, I mean, especially the dream shop. It really was a weird dichotomy there. A perfect shop, just in a place I did not find perfect to live.
Did you not realize that until you'd built the perfect shop? Or when your kids got of certain age, it really just set in?
Kids screwed everything up, man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They do that.
All of a sudden, my priorities changed, and I wanted different things out of life. And it really was the kids that kind of changed the direction of things for us.
But now you have seasons, so.
Yeah, now I'm in Colorado as a result.
Now your kids know what snow is, which is a good thing.
Yeah, in Arizona, they used to bring a giant snow cone machine, and they would dump this stuff they called snow into the parking lot.
Really?
Of their daycare. And it was hilarious as these little Arizona babies who know nothing about snow are out there playing on a giant snow cone in a parking lot. And I'm like, guys, this is not what snow is at all. Yeah, it was pretty pitiful.
Because it's still in the 70s, in the dead of winter down there.
Exactly. So. I mean, at the most, you got a hooded sweatshirt on, and that gets warm. So it's kind of crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah. Well, welcome. It's to all winter. Good now, though.
Excellent. So let's jump in. Diami, I hope you have more to talk about than I do. What you working on?
Well, for some strange reason, I still have 3 20-inch by 12-foot slabs strewn across my shop.
Mm-hmm.
I got some work done on them since we last recorded, but that's really just consisted of more epoxy pour filling. But then, that wasn't enough. So I have a bench top drill press that lives in the far corner of my shop, and I don't use it all that often. So I only pull it out when I need it. And it is the power tool besides a bandsaw. It's the power tool you use when you're building Pinewood Derby cars, and it is Pinewood Derby season. So I had to drag this thing underneath these slabs across to the far corner of my shop near the door now. It's kind of tucked in under my bandsaw, and we're in full production mode on the Pinewood Derby cars. So I've got this big slab is strewn with Pinewood Derby stuff. I'm kind of using it as not really a bench as much as just a shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And to get into the shop today, I had to climb over my files and hammer and assorted sandpapers and everything around the drill press to get into here so I could record. So it's Pinewood Derby season now.
How many do you make?
4.
I know you got 3 kids.
I have one kid racing this year.
Oh, and you're still making 4?
You bring the fastest one to the track.
Oh, nice. Boy. Never got that serious. We made 1 each, and that was it.
So have you been doing research on aerodynamics, how to weight it so that it works the best?
I'll let you know that the aerodynamics are, everything else being equal, aerodynamics will matter, but everything else is not equal. So aerodynamics are basically irrelevant.
So put your time in elsewhere.
Exactly. What I always do is the kids do a fair amount of work. I'm not going to lie and say they do everything, but they run the drill press. They do a lot of the sanding. They'll design their cars hand over hand. We cut them out of the bandsaw. In terms of the design, we work together we take a template, we box out where we need to leave wood so that we can place weights. And then anything else, they can make lines wherever they want, and that's the shape of the car, whatever they draw. So the car just is what it is. To win, you need treat your axles and wheels properly and balance the weight properly, and you'll win. It's that simple.
Nice.
A square block will beat a pencil any day.
It will. But I did much better at Fine Woodworking Live last year than I did at the actual Pinewood Derby last year. So this year, I'm hoping we come back. And this is my penultimate Pinewood Derby, so we need to do well.
Yeah, that's right. Your kids are aging out.
They are.
That's a thing.
But so that's what's going on the shop here.
Excellent. Like I kind of prefaced, I hoped it was more than me, because since we last recorded, it was the holiday, well, more than anything, New Year's, in which case I didn't do a damn thing other than relax with my kids and brace for the cold weather. So I got nothing. Mark, how about you?
You know, normally I would be taking a lot of time off, but with my mom in from Arizona, that means more shop time because she's taking care of the babies and lending a hand with baths and put downs and everything. So it's been great. I was able to finish a jewelry box build that I was doing for the guild and got that done pretty quickly. And I'm going to be moving on to a bunk bed project for my son, something I've promised him a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I got to get to that. But in between, I was rearranging things, looking around my shop, not quite as bad as Diami's situation, but I'm like, tripping over boxes and stuff. And I'm like, you know, just there's things I could just take a day and a half to organize and build something for. I should do it if I could put that time in. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take 2 days. I'm going to make myself a little drill bit storage cabinet, just a little wall hung thing that looks kind of nice. And I could put little blocks with bits in it. So I did that. I put basically like a day and a half's worth of work into this thing and it came out great. And it's going to solve all of my drill storage, you know, drill bit storage woes. And it's so overdue. It's something I should have built years ago, but it's fantastic. And it was a little 2-day project. So got that whipped up really quick and hopefully have a video out on that on Friday. And the other thing is prepping for another book, which I promised myself I would never do because that sucked so bad last time. Like the process of writing is just actually the writing isn't so bad. It's doing the accompaniment, all the photos, all the prep work, everything that goes into getting pictures for this stuff. So I did agree to do a second book. It is with a different publisher and it's a very different style book. It's much more photo intensive, not as much writing and should not be as difficult.
Are you doing the photos again?
Yes, I am. So basically, we're looking at probably the entire month of January dedicated to this, whereas for hybrid woodworking, that was about 6 months straight of doing nothing but focusing on that book. So
wow.
1 month should kind of give you an idea. It's not that it's going to be a bad book. It's just not as like heavy weighted of a book. It's not a 196 page tome on woodworking. It's a little more entry level. So
it's just a beefcake calendar, really, is what you're saying.
It's just a bunch of pictures of me in bathing suits. Yeah. Is all it is. So enjoy that.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
So and, does that mean that I got the date wrong. I'm sorry. I was going to say we're in the middle of January because it feels that way. But as I look at the computer, it's January 3rd. So you're just beginning the book.
Yeah, we just started. Actually, I should have started already, but I'm still just playing catch up from the holidays and had a computer malfunction trying to get everything back in order here. So.
So what's the timetable? Like when's the public going to be able to, any idea this year or
following? It'll be this year. I think this publisher moves pretty quickly. It's the same publisher that did David Picciuto's books.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
With
Springhouse or
Springhouse Press.
Yep.
Yeah. So maybe I shouldn't even be saying anything because technically haven't signed anything, but I don't think there's any harm in it. So yeah, it's with Springhouse Press and they have a very different style. If you see their books, they're very different, very picture focused. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a book that's palatable to a much larger audience. And
we talked to them when they first opened up as a publishing house. And that was their whole philosophy was they were looking to hit, I think at the time they were really focused on like casual hobbyists.
Yeah.
And that seems to be where they continue to go, though. I don't want to overspeak for the exact subject of what your book might be.
I think that would cover it. We're trying to pull people into fine woodworking who haven't really experienced certain things yet. And that's the goal of this book. So, yeah, I think that this is in line with their target of what they're hoping to do, I guess.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It'll be exciting.
Absolutely. So do we have anything else to talk about or is it the special enough that we got Mark on the line?
I think Mark is enough. I think we're done.
Oh, so I can go now?
yeah. That's
it. See you guys.
No. So, I mean, you know, a little bit of inside baseball. We've been trying to hook up and record for what, 4 months now?
It's been a while. I think I've canceled three times.
I've probably canceled once or twice.
Diami canceled at least once.
I did at least once.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, but and I mentioned in the beginning, and it's a recurring event that you do now annually. But what we were, the original focus, and it's still a good thing to talk about, is your Woodworkers Fighting Cancer program. Yep. I guess I don't know. How did we want to approach this? Like, this year it was a simpler project. I think in the past, and I've participated in it a few times. It's been easels. It's been a bookcase. And this year it was a small frame, an epoxy filled frame, right?
Yep.
How do you come up with your projects? I guess if everyone understands the program.
Could I just take a step back before that?
Yeah.
Before we worry about the projects, explain what it is and how you're helping everybody with it, Mark.
Sure. This goes all the way back to 2010 and just the history of it. And there's actually videos on this stuff on our website. If you go to woodworkersfightingcancer.com, that's where all this stuff resides. I met a gentleman named Dwayne Moore, who was suffering from cancer and had this huge battle in front of him, and he wanted to build some stuff for his kids, before his time was up. And it was one of those things that just grabbed me. And the guy was so genuine and so nice, and I wanted to help him. So instead of answering just a couple of questions in this dude's email, I decided to do an entire video series to show him how he told me what his tool limitations were. And I decided to build the same project he was building the way he would have to build it, so that the video itself was essentially for him, but I put it out for the public. And that was the steamer trunk video. And that was, again, back in like 2009, 2010. So I just got really close with him and had a lot of conversations. And I said, you know what? We didn't have kids at the time. It was one of those things where we could just buy plane tickets and go somewhere if we wanted to, which seems like a pipe dream now. But I was like, you know what, let's go see Dwayne. Let's go meet him and see his family. He was up for it. So we stopped in, spent a day with him and his family, hung out in his shop, did a bunch of things. And this was around the time that we started the guild as well. And the first project in the guild was the shaker table, fairly basic project for the most part. But I tied that in to this effort of, hey, let's see if we can raise money. Let's have everybody who builds one of these things will donate money on their behalf, whether it's like $1, $5. I can't remember what it was that first year, but we had so many people build this table. And it was amazing. People just jumped in and they realized that if they build this table, something they get to keep, or they can auction off, or they can give it to a family member, they could sell it if they want to. As long as they send me a picture of it, I will donate money on their behalf. And we just raised a bunch of money and gave it, I think that year started with the American Cancer Society. Mm-hmm. So since then, we decided to make this a yearly thing. Now, we're not a charity. We just kind of push money from the community to a charity directly. So we are just kind of the organizers, if you will. So every year since then, we pick a project and we put the plans out and a video out for free for everybody to build along. And all they have to do is build one and send us a picture. And now that everybody's making videos, they could send us a video link and the videos are worth more money. And we got a little bit smarter as time went on and realized that not only can we donate, but we can get companies to match the pledges. And we started to do these auctions in the last few years where big companies like Powermatic, Oneida, these companies will throw a power tool out there and say, let's auction it off. All the money will go to charity. And it only costs the company, the material cost for that tool. But they basically are giving this to someone who was going to buy it anyway, and they're going to pay full price, if not more, for it. But their purchase goes 100% to this charity, whichever one we choose that year. So this has exploded into this amazing, it's just hard to describe. It's probably the thing I'm most proud of that we've ever done. And we're at the point where I think this year we crossed $100,000 in donations since it started.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I think you'd mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, it's crazy. $100,000, and it's just a bunch of woodworkers, just building projects every year since 2010 now, 7 years. So yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. And every year, it's usually in the fall, we come up with a new project. This year, like you said, we try to do something a little simpler, because I felt in the past I may have made things just a little bit too difficult, and I want more people to build. So I figured let's try something that's a little bit more simplistic, not as time consuming, and see if it does any different.
And did it?
Not really. It's right. You know, we had quite a few people build this year, but I actually expected more because the project is so small.
Right.
So I don't, it's hard to evaluate these things and know what it actually means or why something happened or what it was about the project, maybe the timing. Because it was a simpler project, we also reduced the build period to a month. And in the past, we used to do 2 months. So it could have been a combination of things, but it's not to say we weren't happy with the result. We kind of got the same result, but it was a shorter amount of time. So we hit our 15,000 goal. We hit $16,815. So I think we'll probably continue to do the smaller, more approachable projects because I want people to do this. I mean, there are people who are like, I'm going to, make a bunch of little templates and parts and bring them to a kindergarten class and have all the kids decorate each frame and each one would count for a donation. I love that. That's fantastic.
That is great.
Let's do more of that.
Yeah, a batchable project as opposed to like – I did the easel and where the hell did I? Oh, I gave it to my nephew. And I had a blast doing it, but it was again, it was just big enough. It was probably less than 10 board feet of wood actually, but it was, it was a fairly complicated, chair sized build.
Yeah.
That, it's a little more difficult for a small shop to at least batch out if that was the case. But I know even on that one that there were people that made multiples and were donating them and stuff like that, which is awesome to see. But yeah, I think the approachable thing, it might take, and maybe it'll catch on a little bit more next year, and maybe the project depends on it too,
Yeah. It's tough to say, and I would think we did the Castle bookcase in 2016. It's a pretty massive bookcase and you really got to want one or need one or know where you're going to, like who you're going to give it to. Mm-hmm. And that did just as well, just in terms of, participation. So who knows how this stuff works? Well, I have no idea.
Well,
it's really all the same people and it doesn't matter what you throw at them. They're going to do
it. It could be anything. Next year, it's going to be a Maloof rocker and we'll get the same results.
Yep. Exactly.
While we've missed it this year, I just want to make sure that everybody knows they can go to the site you mentioned, Mark, woodworkersfightingcancer.com. And if you scroll down to the bottom, I'm assuming that big donate button still works.
Yep, exactly.
So, it's well worth going there. As a father of a cancer survivor, I can't speak to how important this stuff is. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we actually, every year, we kind of change the beneficiary. This year was the Jimmy Fund, and that's a special fund that was set up. There's a whole story behind it, but it benefits the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. So some years we focus on research, benefiting research, and then other years it's more on aftercare or helping families cope, things that just make lives a little bit more comfortable when they're going through this terrible situation. It just depends on year. So all year long, even though this is done, you could still make a donation and it will still go to the Jimmy Fund and the Dana-Farber Institute.
Excellent. Go do that. And we'll be here when you get back.
Okay. I will donate more money.
There you go.
So to change gears for a minute, if I understand right, Mark, let me do the quick math. I'm going to see you in 4 months.
Is that when it is?
Yeah.
I'm not good with this Hulk. I go
April,
like
April.
The week before Nicole goes, hey, you got a trip next week? I'll be like, oh shit. Okay. So April is the fine woodworking event. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. So I guess we will see each other then.
You want to, that event would be Fine Woodworking Live 2018, where you're not just going to be there, but you're putting on the whole show this year, right?
Yeah. The whole thing's going downhill. I don't know what's going on. They asked me to teach a class, so it's weird. But yeah, I'll be doing power carving. Actually, I was talking to some of the folks over there, and just wanted to do something different. I mean, they have people there already who can do, making basic cabinet joints and things, and they would do it much better than I would. But something like power carving is a little bit more unique. Not everybody's interested in it. So it was something that I thought could be a unique offering and something that would be a lot of fun to do in front of people, because when you're power carving, shavings just go everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping I'll be able to sometime between now and then design just a very basic maybe like a little bench or something, something that would lend itself really well to this power carving process.
Glue gun holder.
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect. So that's kind of the goal, is to make a little project. And, you know, I'm just excited to have a free ticket to go to the event, because I haven't been able to go yet. It's been usually woodworking in America every year that I've got a chance to go somewhere. But this one I'm super excited about. The feedback on it and what people say about it, it sounds like a fantastic event.
I've been to everyone, and it's a very good event that became a fantastic event last year. They got the formula right last year. Mm-hmm. And they seem to just be repeating that formula again this year. So I expect it to be a fantastic event.
Yeah, it sounds great.
I look forward to hearing about the scene from Dexter that your room will be. Because as a conference room, I can only imagine, isn't too conducive to flying chips and dust and the way that carving can do.
Yeah.
I've seen enough. I mean, they lay the Visqueen out below a bench because they're trying to protect the Radisons, whatever, you know, and but that's a whole nother, you're opening up a whole nother can there.
I think it was the second Fine Woodworking Live, but they had this group build project, and it was in the middle of this banquet hall. And when it was done, we all worked together and we vacuumed the carpet.
Oh man, that's great. Okay.
It's like doing your dishes after dinner. I mean, it's just part of the job.
Well, maybe instead of just doing a Q&A at the end, they just hand me a vacuum and I could just be cleaning up while I'm talking to people. That'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Are you, I guess without getting too much into your power carving, because you may have not thought about it too much, but are you what do you like, Diami? You like the Cutsall compared to the microplane or the turbo planes?
I do like the Cutsall.
So
but I'm not the one giving a presentation on it. So
right, or the new ball gouge thing that just came out. I mean, what angle are you taking as far as tooling goes for that class?
That'll be an interesting question, because I actually have to do a video pretty soon on the ball gouge, so we'll see where that goes.
Oh, did you get one?
Yeah, I've got one. It's awesome. a really unique product, And it's not going to be good for everything, right? It's like good for making spoons and bowls, and it's not a precision tool at all. Like they designed it specifically to make it look like this thing was just roughly done by hand. That's the look they're going for. Okay. So I'm not 100% sure, because usually when I do power carving, it's all a sort of precursor to a nicely smooth finished regular curve.
Right.
You know, so that ball gouge is a different beast, but who knows, maybe it'll be a good opportunity to talk about something, you know, unique if people want that look. You know, the carving tools that I like the most, the turbo plane is fantastic. Arbortex turbo plane is good. Their industrial carver is good. They are really aggressive. So you have to exercise extreme amounts of control with those, because you could just blink and remove like 3/4 of an inch worth of material. Mm-hmm. So I do like them. But I like them at the beginning of the process when I need to hog stuff away. Once I get down to a little bit more of the finer parts of the process, I actually do like to move toward things like Cutsall. I typically use the Holy Galahad discs from King Arthur Tools. Very similar to the Cutsall style. These have holes in them, so it's actually kind of nice as you're carving and it spins. Those holes kind of all become one as it spins really fast.
You can see through it.
Yeah, you can see through it, and you can actually see some of your work, and it kind of does help. It's not just a gimmick. It actually does help in how you approach the material. So they make a bunch of different grits, and they tend to bounce on the wood. It's a little more fatiguing to use those burrs, but I think that's okay, because I'm in a part of the process where I'm really just kind of doing the fine finesse work. Using the burrs at the beginning of the process sucks. Like, they're so aggressive, and it just you feel this – you know, basically it's just like a rasp, you know, like a very aggressive rasp, just kind of bouncing on a surface. I don't like that too much.
Mark, the Holy Galahad is a bunch of spikes.
Pretty much. It's like grit on the surface. So the coarsest stuff I would definitely call more spiky.
Because the Cutsall has ones with the spikes, but they also have ones that are just the random carbide, like glued on. I find that those don't skip nearly as much and end up with a smoother surface. I mean, it's still got to be sanded and everything, but relatively speaking, it is a smoother surface and it doesn't trench.
Right. Yeah. Those are the ones that I use that I would say like their medium and their fine mm-hmm. category are definitely what you're describing there.
Okay.
So it's a little bit smoother. But anything that's, you know, the super coarse stuff, it's either going to take forever to get through or it's just going to bounce like hell on the surface. So that's why I like, if I'm going to do a blade, the turbo plane or the industrial carver, that's the stage that I would do that.
Mm-hmm. Now with the turbo plane, have you had success with it doing convex shapes or just concave shapes?
You know, you could do convex. I just haven't.
Okay.
I haven't had much need for it. I mean, maybe, you know, I might have done something like if I'm just putting a little detail on the end of the like a three piece bench or something like that. And I just want to put just kind of a convex detail on the outside. But it works just as well either way, as long as you know what the shape is and you just have to remove wood between the line and where the wood currently is. it'll do convex and concave just as well. It's just that most of the time I'm doing concave surfaces.
Okay. And have you tried the cordless die grinders yet?
I haven't. And you know what's sitting right next to me on the floor? The Milwaukee that you recommended. Yeah. Then I was like, yes, this looks great. So it's still new in the box.
It
I haven't
great.
Opened it yet. But that will be what I will be practicing on when I'm working on this project for Fine Woodworking Live.
I can't recommend that thing enough. It's got me off the Fordham.
Yeah, you know, I never liked the Fordham too much. I always had a Makita corded die grinder electric that was, you know, worked just fine. But the freedom of not having cords and not being tethered with something like that, the same thing with the angle grinder and these grinding discs.
Oh my gosh, that's a revelation also.
Yeah, I mean, just having the freedom to move. And when you're power carving, you tend to move in 360 degrees. You have to get all the way around a workpiece because, you know, tear out is a huge issue and rotation direction is something that really, really matters. So you find yourself kind of moving all around. And if you're you know, trying to manage a cord at the same time, it's a lot of times you get very close to cutting that cord or grinding into it. So yeah, it's nice to have batteries.
You know what I found really helps with that is the Pattermaker's vise.
Oh, really? Yeah, I don't have one of those.
You need one.
I need to get one.
I set one up about this time last year. And it was one of these things where it looked really cool. It looked really cool. I was looking at it. And the minute I put it in, it was like, how did I ever work without it?
Oh, no kidding.
You still move around a lot. I mean, it's power carving. You're not going to stand still. But you end up moving the piece about 60% of the time you would have moved.
Hmm. Okay. I wonder if I can install one on a bench with my existing vices so it's not in the way, but still functional.
On the back.
As long as
you can go all around it.
Yeah, as long as I don't mind bumping my elbow into the wall.
Well, yeah, whatever your constraints are.
I actually built a dedicated bench for mine. It's a little 24-inch by 24-inch bench. It's kind of like Shannon's joinery bench, but it's a pattern maker's vice bench.
That's a really good idea.
I'm sure you can fit something like that in.
A little higher, sure. You know, a little, not necessarily more mobile, but, you know, something that serves that purpose.
Yeah, just and more ergonomic.
In Diami's spacious shop, you know, all he needs is another dedicated bench.
That's right. I said, you know what? I need two benches in here.
Plenty of room. It'll be fine.
In a one-car garage.
So is that the only class you're doing is power carving, or will you be doing other instruction while you're there?
No, it'll just be the power carving. I don't know if we're doing – I think we're doing two of those classes. There might be something else with podcasting. I don't know. Maybe. We'll have to see. But as far as the official classes, I believe that's all we're doing.
Okay.
Or I should say that's all they're going to let me do.
Well, I believe they're sold out, so it's not like we're going to change anything. But I thought so. If they're not, they're close. But if they're not – Mark's enough reason to go.
I don't mean to be so surprised like they shouldn't. I didn't realize they had because I bought my dad a ticket for Christmas and they were not sold out at that point is all I'll say.
Hold on. Now I got to look.
But, you know, my dad just really wanted to meet Mark and I figured this was the cheapest way to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Let's see. No, it's not. So early bird still available until January 15th. Register now. So no, they're not sold out. I overstepped.
And I will put Mark in this position, but I will defend their pricing because having been to it last year and having been to all of the other conferences, I've been to almost every woodwork in America. I've been to Weekend with Wood. The benefit of Fine Woodworking Live is from Friday night until Saturday afternoon, they feed you. And there's the banquet that's part of the ticket also. And if you figured out all those extra costs and the food and added them to the cost of WIA, WIA would end up being more expensive than Fine Woodworking mm-hmm. Live. I don't know that either one is a better conference, but they're both an equivalent deal when you actually add it all up. Though mm-hmm. Fine Woodworking Live seems like it's more expensive when you first look at the ticket.
Do you have any perspective for whether you feel you might learn more there? Or maybe like if you make the same comparison of the magazines, let's say, the sort of the stereotypes of what those magazines mm-hmm. represent, do the live shows kind of follow that same pattern?
Well, I'll start that by defending Weekend with Wood. Because my opinion of what you get out of the magazine with Wood is not as much as what you get out of the other magazines. It's mm-hmm. a really solid magazine, and they know their audience really well, but it's not a super advanced audience. Mm-hmm. That being said, at the conference, and you taught there 1 year, didn't you? So I'm sure you met some of the other instructors. The instructors were on whatever level you needed them to be, and you'd ask them questions, and they were the same as any instructor I've had at any of their conferences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my opinion is the purpose of the classes and the instructors they bring in are kind of tailored to the audience of the different magazines. However, the quality of instruction at all of them is about the same. And if some of the instructors are better than others, but if you have go in there knowing what you want to learn and you grab the instructor and you say, can we go over this? I haven't seen an instructor who's not willing to go over it with you, whether it's in or out of the class. So I think they're all pretty good in terms of that education, but they're not academic conferences per se. So really the education is what you bring to it. If you just want to lag around and go to the marketplace and hang out with your friends, that's fine. If you really want to get into it and pay attention to all the classes and ask the instructors questions, you'll get a lot more out of it on that end. But I think they're all pretty good in that regard, if that's what you're there for. But you got to put a little bit of work in to get that out of the conference.
Right.
How is Fine Woodworking Live structured? I've not been able to go, but I've been to WIA and I was at Weekend with Wood with you, Diami. And there have been in those two conferences, there were a little differences, but there were like defined tracks to go down in some. And then WIA, it was a little more free form, I thought, or at least recently had been, where you kind of could pick and choose as you went. And, is Fine the same way, or do they really kind of intend you to kind of go down this particular path?
No, it's open and you can basically wander in and out of different classes and go to whatever class. I think wandering in and out of classes is a little bit more discouraged than it is at WIA, but you can absolutely do it. And you don't have to go to, it's not like you're signing up for a particular class and you can only go to this class and not the other class during the same time. You go wherever you want. But every morning at Fine Woodworking, they have a keynote. So every attendee goes in, and I think they did that one of the mornings at Weekend with Wood, if I remember right. But they do that both mornings at Fine Woodworking Live. And last year, one of them was the people from the magazine talking, and another one, they brought in Vic Teslin, and he said something about hand tools. I don't know.
hand tools, blah, 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 hand tools.
So that was kind of nice because it fostered a bit of community that you were all there for this one thing. And it's like an hour, keynote. And then you go on to your other classes. But then the other thing that I'll say that was not true at Weekend with Wood has been true of some WIAs, but not most of them, is that the staff of the magazine who's putting on the event, in the case of Fine Woodworking Live at the current event in, venue in Massachusetts, they're staying in the same hotel as everybody else. So you really do spend the weekend with them. And for the most part, that's a good thing. Kenny can get on your nerves after a while, but it's the price of going to Fine Woodworking Live. So it's nice that it builds more camaraderie. And I think that of the magazines, this is, at least for me, much less true than it used to be, but Fine Woodworking was the one that had the reputation of being up on an ivory tower. And you really... they're down in the trenches with you and you see them at the bar afterwards and they're just there like everybody else at the conference. So I thought that was a nice aspect to it.
Oh, that's cool. Well, and really with woodworking in America, not coming back for potentially what, a 3-year break when it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not going to be a whole lot of other choices there. Well, I guess Weekend with Wood is still going strong, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're going rock solid.
So WIA is just not even a contender for the moment.
Right now, let me put you on the spot, Mark. And if you don't have an answer for this, I can appreciate that because I don't either. But Megan's gone. It's been 2 years. Have we seen the end of WIA?
I think the writing was on the wall a while ago. I think ultimately when you're a magazine, your primary bread and butter is something very different than putting on a conference. Like this whole conference thing must be the biggest thorn in their sides. And as much as they probably enjoy it when they're there, or maybe the aftermath of it, they're like, oh, that was definitely good. It's got to be one of those things that really just puts them out for a long time, just organizing it, putting it together, and it all distracts from the primary revenue generator of those companies.
Exactly.
Right now. So this is, yeah, there's goodwill. Maybe they make a few bucks on the conference itself, and it's good brand recognition, but it's really a small, small audience. You know, you're talking about a few hundred people at these events. So to distract a good portion of your staff to focus on these things, that doesn't feel sustainable. So I don't know how long, you know, this is going to happen for all of these companies, how long they're going to continue to do these things. But it's not too surprising to me that is this big long break with Megan's exodus and you know, whoever's making these decisions at the top. I wouldn't necessarily count on there being another woodworking in America. And that's total speculation, but I wouldn't blame them. You know,
I completely agree with that.
Yeah. If I had a magazine, I don't know that I'd be thinking about conferences, you know, like it's just it's so much work, and it's not bringing in subscribers to the magazine.
Right. Right. And certainly you think about, I want to say there's 400 people I find woodworking live. It's mm-hmm. that kind of ballpark. And that's the size of all these events. They're not a little bit more or less, but that's about the size. So let's say half those people are subscribers. Let's assume absolute best case scenario, you get 200 subscribers. Was that worth the cost of this giant conference?
And that's the thing. It is like when you go there, you get into this weird, you know, thing where I guess this happens at any conference. It feels bigger than it is, you know, but when you actually look at the numbers, and numbers are a funny thing, especially when you're, you know, producing content and you start to see numbers that just kind of become meaningless after a while. Like when I see we're at almost 500,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel, that number doesn't mean anything. It's like Monopoly money. It doesn't really mean much to me. But when I see an event that I go to and I go, this is 400 people, this is huge. And then I realize the number of people that subscribe to my channel is 500,000. It's this relative thing that makes you go, man, this is a drop in the bucket. You know, to make 400 people have a great weekend, how much does that affect their bottom line or improve their bottom line? Mm-hmm. It can't be much at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a distraction is probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Yeah.
I like it, so I'm willing to have them make that distraction.
I hope they keep doing it because it's super fun. And if they don't do it, I would hope that, like, let's say these companies decide it's not worth continuing to do, that maybe companies who – well, isn't there that Workbench Con or something coming up?
Workbench Con is coming up.
Isn't that – doesn't that teach you how to be a DIY – blogger and
it seems to be more focused on content production, yeah. But my hope is that if that can be done, then maybe someone else can step in and say, yeah, there's opportunity here just for the sake of the conference. It doesn't have to be tied to a magazine or any other woodworking production. A company who knows how to put on conferences could come in and make this happen. Because if you look at the list of names that they have going to that event, you know, these are also people, if they can convince them to go, there's probably a good chance they could convince other more classic woodworkers to go and just make this more like one of these events. And this way it's not tied to any, you know, the success or failure of a magazine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know who organized that one.
The people who organize the Haven Conference, which is a conference of bloggers.
It's one of those things. Nicole and I were looking at this, and when you go to a website and you can't tell who's behind it, I get really weirded out. You know what I mean? Like when I saw that, I was like, because I saw a few people, I think it was Fix This Build That.
Yeah.
I think Brad was talking about it and I was like, oh, what is this thing? So I took a look and I'm like, it really bugs me that I can't figure out who the hell is behind this. Mm-hmm. You know, so you start digging and you start to realize it is kind of one of those things. It must be someone who specializes in going into a field and putting on a conference, you know,
which is fine. I mean, if that's your specialty, go for it. And this is new media or new technology and DIY. I mean, it's Fix This Build That, it's DiResta, it's Bob Claggett and other people I honestly don't know of, but that's an interesting thing. Yeah. I'd like to see where that goes.
It looks interesting, but personally, it looks like it's about how to make content about this stuff, not how to do this stuff.
There's going to be a little bit from what I read just in the listings and stuff like that of what they're covering. It does seem like there will be some of that stuff, but looking at the who's going, look at who's speaking, this is going to be so focused on passing out stickers and shaking hands and networking. It's a networking event.
Yeah.
It is. And it's online media. For sure. I mean, looking at their little schedule, it's building a toolkit with branding, balancing life, YouTube, and all this, but also welding. You know, I mean, it's an interesting mix, more towards the maker community, I guess, than the woodwork community. But yeah.
Well, and you know, and honestly, when we're talking about content producers, these are people who do like to talk about not just the thing they do, the craft of what they do, but also the craft of the content production. And it's stuff like Wood Talk, we get in trouble for it all the time because you got three content producers having a conversation. Sometimes the conversation goes into what camera we're using or when we talk about our woodworking, we can't separate the content production from the woodworking. It's just part of what we do.
Right.
But the audience doesn't necessarily care that we, you know, had trouble with our battery and had to reshoot something, you know, like they don't give a shit about that, you know? I can see with a conference like this, there's going to be a lot of energy and excitement about it, but I'm very curious to see, you know, what comes out of it. What's the feedback, but it's definitely going to be like, as far as YouTubers go, the hot event to be at.
Absolutely.
Which is probably why I'm not going.
That's why you're going to Massachusetts.
Yeah. I'm going to Massachusetts with all the old farts.
Do you have a feeling that you're kind of like the YouTube old guard?
Oh, totally.
Because, I mean, you were one of the first, right? That was actually producing a regular program as far as craft-based or woodworking-based.
Was it today you wrote that post or released that post about all that you did in the year?
Yes. Yeah, that was this morning. Because I was all pissed off.
Yeah, because that touches on this theme a lot.
I didn't see that. Oh.
Yeah, good. It's the latest post on the website. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we started in 2006, and YouTube started in 2005. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, we would look for other better places than YouTube, because YouTube kind of sucked. There were sites that would allow us to upload in HD when that was available. YouTube didn't do that for a long time. So in the beginning, YouTube was optional. It was like, it was like the equivalent of, hey, should I put my video up on Vimeo too? And you go, yeah, why the hell not? Just, you know, cross post it to Vimeo. Who cares?
Yeah.
Well, at the time, that's what it was. And in the, you know, probably first 50 videos, I sporadically uploaded. I didn't even upload everything there. So by the time it was like, okay, I'll put every video up on YouTube, was probably like, you know, late 2006, 2007. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, you know, I can't say absolutely for sure. But I do think I was probably one of, if not the first one to do that. So I've been around a very long time with this stuff. And I 100% would say that I fall into the old guard. I fall into a group of people who refuses to call themselves YouTubers because I wasn't born on YouTube. My business wasn't born on YouTube.
And even today, your business is not only YouTube.
No, it's just a small portion of it, which is, you know, what makes some of the feedback and what generated that post that I put up today. The feedback that you get when people are like, well, so-and-so posts this many videos and look at how many views they get. And I'm like, yeah, but they don't have a guild, you know, they don't have book sales and t-shirt sales. And there's a full, you know, serious business that we have to run here, and making free videos on YouTube is actually not my primary focus. So it's a very different model, than most people are used to. And they don't necessarily know the details, but they like to give me business advice, which is always fun. But yeah, you know, I talk about this with Shannon all the time, because he's another one who kind of represents yeah. that older crowd of people who were doing it as like the first wave. And I think, you know, it's critical not to just fall back into the old ways of doing things. I need to continue to adapt. I need to try new things. I need to look at what everyone else is doing and really cherry pick what I think is worthwhile for us to adopt, because I don't want to be the old guard. I want to be someone who firmly has a foot in both camps, you know, the newer stuff as well as the old stuff. And then maybe even getting the respect of companies like Fine Woodworking and Popular Woodworking. I love being able to speak all of those languages and kind of move back and forth between those worlds. I mean, it's all the same world, but I think you guys also being very familiar with the older, you know, first wave crowd, I think you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also, there's a, not that there aren't lots of people who have gone down the rabbit hole, but there seems to be a lot more making than woodworking now.
Yeah, it's a, I see it as a competition of creativity, you know, and this is not a bad thing. This is a very, this could be a very good thing because there are some amazingly creative people, but I watch what people are doing and some of the stuff they do. I'm like, if I was starting today, I would never make it. I'm not creative enough. I'm not funny enough. I'm not motivated enough. And I watch some of the stuff these people create and I'm absolutely in awe of it. But you're right. A lot of the stuff that's getting the numbers, it goes outside of the world of woodworking.
Exactly. Like at least I think it's wonderful, but it's not my focus. It's not the community right. that I came up in.
Yeah. We will always be a smaller percentage because we're just, I always refer to it as a funnel. We're deeper in that funnel. So yeah. there's just fewer people wanting to do what it is that we're doing.
Well said.
Well said indeed.
Thank you.
It's like you've done this for a while.
Oh, I've done this too much and too many times.
Did you ever think back then, like, did you have the plan or have an idea what was over the horizon, you know, 12 years ago? As Not we're now really. In 2018, like.
No, I think, you know, in the early days, at best, what I was hoping to do was emulate a New Yankee Workshop or Woodworks show on the internet. Like that was my idea. That was my inspiration. I loved what David Marks did. Was always a huge follower of Norms. And man, there was nothing better than like waking up on a Saturday morning, flicking on the TiVo, and I see there's a new Yankee Workshop episode recorded that I could sit down and watch, put it on in the shop. Like that was my zen, you know, at the time. And I never built anything Norm built, but I loved watching him. He was so fun mm-hmm. and really calming to watch. So when I started to do this on the internet, I'm like, if I could just do a PBS style show online, that would be the end all be all. So that's kind of where I started. I never expected the sort of online woodworking world to move into this episodic, weekly, quantity focused, and also creativity focused sort of world that we're in now, that I'm constantly having to kind of fight against, because you know, in my opinion, I would rather somebody do a more meaningful project, spend more time doing it, and know that they're living a fairly balanced lifestyle, you know, giving some attention to their family and not just spending every second in the shop. I would rather wait more time to get that better video. But it does seem like the world around us is changing into this. No, you know, getting this quantity out, getting a weekly video out, being consistent. It doesn't necessarily matter what I'm building, as long as I make it fun to watch and somewhat interesting, and I do it on a weekly basis. That's my formula for success. And it's just something that I can't do. I can't build the things I want to build and do it in that format. It just doesn't work for me.
I think that speaks to, like you said, being further down the funnel or up the funnel, whichever way you want to put it.
Yeah.
Because the general and wildly creative stuff that's out, people are out there producing, it gets people interested, and hopefully some percentage of them decide that, you know, spending 6 months making a piece of furniture is the way they want to really express their art and their creativity. And then they'll yep. find somebody like you and find that more in-depth, more paced, more explanatory information much more valuable than 10 minutes of footage, half of which is at, you know, 8 speed as something's getting built.
Yeah, that's 100%. That is the core of my business, because ultimately we charge people for woodworking information and for content. So who's willing to pay? People who are really deep down in a niche. Those are the people who are willing to pay. And that's who I talk to, you know? So when I go and put free videos out there, I do the best I can to make it as approachable and fun as possible. But, you know, we're never going to have like Duresta numbers. You know, it's just not, that's not what I do. That's not who I am. And it would never happen. But I've got mad respect for the people that are really just doing that well. It's awesome to see.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a direction I intended the topic to go, but this was an interesting discussion, and hopefully, at least for our listeners, it wasn't too inside that, because I try to keep ours. You know, I think we're a little bit looser than you guys tend to be, but try to keep it focused on woodworking and not content creation. But I have a priority mail package sitting over here on top of my planer that I believe your mom sent me.
Planer brackets, baby.
It's planer brackets.
Did get them.
I ordered them when they first came out. I've not opened the box yet.
Oh, good, man.
Because for some reason, there's these 12-foot slabs.
They're even better when they're out of the box.
I've heard that. I'm very excited. So thank you for working with Andy, and, you know, give him a big slap in the back for me. I've seen people install them. They seem like just a no-brainer, fantastic product. But I'm trying to think of the craziest thing I can put on my planers when I finally get around to installing them. Do you think I could put a drum sander on top?
Yes. If it's small enough, yeah. Yeah, it'll take a lot of weight up there. Someone actually, darn it, who was it? Someone in the Guild Facebook group posted what they built, and it's this massive, like, multiple level rack. It's exactly what, if I had time to build, I would have built by now. But man, it's a great opportunity for wood storage. And if you just make one level tool storage, it's pretty handy. I mean, all I did was kind of bring the product to market and kind of help refine some of the details, but this is like 100% Andy's invention.
He's crazy. And I mean that in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The good kind of crazy.
Yeah.
How cool is it? I mean, did you guys work together before you moved to Denver? Or you just happened to move together to the same place?
It was an extremely fortuitous coincidence. Like, we, I think, had maybe passed an email back and forth. He had just moved, and I was in the process of moving. And then it was like, well, this will get a whole lot easier, you know, once I get out there. And yeah, now we're just like a 30-minute drive away. So anything we want, you know, we've got a couple other irons in the fire. And it's great. It's fantastic just being near creative people like that, really smart people. But I'll tell you guys, the product manufacturing and product sale thing I've discovered is not my thing. <It's> like, there are certain aspects of it that are great. I really enjoyed it. But ultimately, when it comes to like haggling with manufacturers to get the best price, like, this gave me a whole new perspective for all of those small manufacturers, like boutique hand tool makers, people you might see at these conferences who just set up a booth and they make, you know, a small line of tools. Anybody who has to get anything manufactured, and especially if you want to do it in the US, my gosh, do I have, you know, crazy respect for that now. And if someone charges a little bit more for their product and they're doing it alone, I understand why now. You know, like, there's just so much that goes into it. So that's one of the reasons why we don't do the taps anymore. I basically did what I wanted to do with them. I thought it was an interesting experiment, but I decided I no longer wanted to be responsible for them. It was just too much for me to deal with. My job is content creation. So the more time I'm sitting here dealing with, you know, invoicing and purchase orders and counting inventory of, you know, thousands of little taps, is the less time I'm doing the thing that brings in money for me.
You can't write books if you're making taps.
Yeah, I can't write introductory books. Come on. Yeah, so we actually pushed everything to Eagle America. And they were very interested. They were one of the first companies to take on some of the product and sell it after purchasing from us.
Okay.
So they were a natural fit, great people at MLCS and Eagle America. And now it's their product, and they're working with Andy directly. And I was able to gracefully move out and let someone else take it over.
I'm assuming that they have much more experience with that, and it's an easier process for Andy than dealing with some schlub from New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he comes over and he's like, how much he wants to get paid. Right. And I'm like, well, okay, let's see, you know, and I'm pulling out the numbers and got my little calculator here. I mean, it's a small time operation. But yeah, for him, like, here's the thing. We got to a point where we sold so many of them in the first year that I had no more funds to get them produced. And I wasn't sure I wanted to keep doing this. So I didn't want to just throw all this money or borrow. And we're a debt-free business. So borrowing money would have been a huge deal for us. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to put anything more into it, but the product needed to be on the market. We've already introduced it. It was irresponsible to not have these available. So that's when I started to get into conversations with Eagle America about taking it over. And I didn't even really like make any money on the transfer of the product. It's not like I sold it to them. Mm-hmm. I literally just sold off my inventory and let them take it over, you know, but I did what I wanted to do with it. And now Andy's in their hands and I think he's going to be better for it.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I think we're all better with you guys working together and the things that you've helped launch.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, he's got some creative ideas and now it's just a matter of if the product is simple enough, you know, like it's not a very complicated thing, then I might take it on.
So you're going to start hand making those quick travel vices he's designing?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, actually, I got I'm going to start scrolling all the little gears and everything myself. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a perfect example of something I would not touch with a 10.
Yeah, that seems a little too complicated.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
A little bit.
All right, well, we've droned on for a while, but before I let you go, Mark, there's one thing that I just have to ask you while we've got you on the show.
Okay.
What is Phil Pinsky really like?
He's an ass. Phil's a great dude. He's my buddy. We're good friends now.
I heard that.
Yeah. You know what? In the last year, there have been, you know, we're talking about video content, but let's not forget how great and how many audio podcasts have come on, you know, come to our attention. I mean, it's exploded. And this is like probably wave 3 or 4 of audio woodworking podcasts. And this is the biggest one yet. Mm. And this year I've done more guest spots and interviews than I can count at this point. So it's always fun when I get a chance to be on shows like theirs and just kind of meet all these new people. And everybody's so cool and is kind of from a similar mindset, you know. So it's never work. It's just tons of fun chatting with people. So Phil is one of those people. He's a good dude.
All right.
And also an ass.
Excellent. Well, Diami, does that move us on to our favorite?
It does. It does. And with that plethora of woodworking audio podcasts out there, because mm-hmm. I firmly believe it is the format for woodworking conversation and instruction.
Indeed.
You know, we needed something to set ourselves apart. So we do beer choices.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. So Sean, you're up.
Oh, good. You know, freaked out on my way home from work today, realizing I didn't have anything good tonight. So I stopped in the beer store on the way home like I normally do on recording nights. And I happened upon this woodworking-related beer that was on the shelf and just screamed to me because it's table beer. And it has nothing to do with woodworking, really.
But, I was going to ask how you were getting to woodworking from that.
Because it says table. It's a table. No, it's made by it's actually produced by a brewery in South Carolina, but it's part of the Crooked Stave artisanal beer project. But it is a very smooth wild ale, an American wild, that foamed up when I opened it like crazy. So it was like a geyser popping, but a cloudy, light, refreshing beer that you could drink every day, like it says. Like, this is something that you could drink every day of the year. Yeah.
That sounds appetizing and messy.
It was messy because it got all over my pants and computer mouse and everything. But after that, it was good.
Nice.
All right.
How about you, Diami?
I'm going to go with the 6-point Tesla.
So that's DC, not AC. Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. I could kill an elephant with this. It is their hop charged lager. And Tesla seems to like their hops, which is okay.
You think?
But most of what they make are ales and IPAs, and this is a lager, and it's pretty darn good. Though, as we were discussing earlier, they're bringing out what they're promising to be an incredibly hoppy yet zero IBU ale next month. So that should be interesting. But the Tesla is a solid lager.
Nice.
And Mark?
Well, I'm going to make one specific recommendation and one general recommendation. There was a local dude named Rich, really nice guy, and I did a favor for him, and I gave him a clamp that he needed, and he brought me a 4-pack of bourbon barrel quad. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read the description. Based loosely on the Smokestack series, the sixth glass, this Abbey-style quadruple is separated into a number of oak bourbon barrels where it ages for varying lengths of time, some for up to 3 years. And it goes on to say more things and more words. But it really tasty, super high alcohol content. It's pretty expensive, but, and here's the thing, I don't know that much about beer. I just kind of drink it when it's around. My neighbor next door brews his own beer, and this goes into my general recommendation.
Okay.
I shared one with him. He loved it. So he not only, he's brewed tons of stuff in the past, but he's trying to replicate this with a homebrew. And most of the beer that I've drinking, is that, that's drink. A word, right?
It is. It's a word.
It's a word, especially after you drink. Most that I've had in the last year has been his home brew, and the stuff is fantastic. Like, it's great living next to a home brewer, because anytime he's out there doing something, it's like, hey, you want some? So that's my general recommendation is to
live next to a make, brewer?
Yeah, move next to a home brewer and you're set.
You know what I got for Christmas? A Mr. Gotta... Beer.
Nice.
A home brewing kit.
Sweet.
So I'm soon going to be that. Not really. I don't know how much I'll do with it, but I'll try it once.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a fun process.
You know what, Sean? I think that since you don't use your garage for anything useful, you could probably brew in your garage.
You know what? I could. It'll be in this weather. It'll be ice aged or whatever, you know, because it's colder than shit out there.
It'll be Rocky Mountain Fresh.
Rocky Mountain Fresh.
Yeah, straight from the Ohio Rockies.
Yeah, exactly. The Ohio Rockies. We're right. We're about 3/4 of a mile lower than you guys.
Oh, okay.
Not exactly high altitude.
Nice.
All right. So now that we've covered books and conferences and YouTube and beer, I think we're done talking about woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, people, you know, they want to find out where to buy your book. Where could they find out more about you?
They can go to thewoodwhisperer.com. That is where it all started. And that's where that's sort of the hub for everything else we do, including the Wood Whisperer Guild. And twwstore.com is where we sell the book. You can buy the book. Actually, you could probably buy it in the bookstore. It just depends on their stock and if they order it in. But you can get it from Pop Woodworking. But if you buy from us, you get a video that goes along with it. And all the books I've ever sold through our website have been signed, much to the dismay of my right wrist. But I do sign every single book that goes out. So
you know what you should do?
What's that?
And I offer this as a suggestion. Certainly, I don't sell books, so maybe I'm way off base here. But I have... I don't know what it's called, but years ago, before he left the magazine, Schwarz has a book that's basically it's all of his blog posts about planes combined into a single book.
Okay.
And there was a subset of the books that he brought home to sign rather than signing at work, and his daughter, Caddy, signed some subset of them. And I have one that he and Caddy signed, and I'm convinced it's worth more than one that he signed by himself. So you should have the kids sign the books.
I think Mateo has signed a few in the past because people requested it, but he's actually now just at the point that he could write his name. So I don't know what he put in the book, but it definitely didn't look like his name, but he scribbled in it. So yeah, that's not a bad idea.
To make them extra special.
Exactly. Yeah. Extra valuable. We'll deface. I say this anytime I'll sign a book, I will happily deface your book and lower its value by signing it.
Do you ever get asked to sign other people's books?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I wish that would happen though.
Well, wait till
that would be nice and awkward.
I got to see who else is presenting there whose book I have.
I think if Cremona ever writes a book, that'll probably be the first time it happens, because we get people who confuse us all the time in emails. Really? Like, well, they just not that we look that much alike, but that we're always sort of associated together with things that we do. So it's, I thought, didn't you build a bandsaw? And it's like, no, where am I going to put a bandsaw?
Wow. You know,
a bandsaw mill. That's not me. It's the other Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. The one who spells his name with two T's.
Yeah, exactly. He's about 6 inches shorter than I am. I think it's just a natural thing. People watch so much video content, so they just kind of, things blur together, and they just assume we're the same person, I guess.
It's crazy how that happens.
It is.
I will say, looking through your store real quickly, take nothing away from the leather apron that you have, but I'm glad I've got the old green cross-backed apron.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, we actually still sell the canvas ones. What you were looking at is the Christmas version of the store. My mom is here. I don't let her work, so we only sell the things that are easily, like, I always want to sell the book. So my book is available. The guild aprons are done by Calavera, so those are still technically for sale. So all the other stuff, like those other aprons, those will be there, but it'll be about in about a week, my mom will be back in Arizona, and the store will have more than like five things.
Do you actually turn off sales when she can't ship them?
I do. Yeah. Well, okay. The thing is, my mom is a workaholic and very, and Diami, I'm sure you could relate, very East Coast personality. Mm-hmm. She's very focused on work, and it's her son's business. So she takes it very personally, and she does great. She does a fantastic job for us, but she's so into it that when she comes to visit, she'll be on her laptop working half the time. And I'm like, Mom, no, this is like the holidays. Let's take a break. So she's like, but I'm going to be there for weeks. You want the store closed that long? And I said, yes, I do. So like, I would rather have her enjoy this and make this a vacation than make the few bucks we would have made keeping the store open.
Even if your customers can wait, she can't if they're all just, the orders are stockpiling.
Oh yeah. She, it would drive her nuts. She would be banging her head on the wall if she couldn't ship. If these orders are sitting there and she couldn't ship them out, it would drive her crazy. So yeah, Mom's fired when she comes to visit.
Okay, so good. 2 weeks, good. Everybody go to the site and buy everything. Weeks.
And make her work overtime.
Yeah, she'll like it when she's home. It'll be fine.
I will say, I think the only time I've ever had a email conversation with your mom was, it was years ago, but I broke my mug and the new mugs were different. And I was like, no, I like the old mugs. And she's like, well, there's this one that's got like a slight defect. I'm like, yes.
Could I speak to that for a second? Cause you're cutting close to the bone right now, Sean. The old original curved woodworkers fighting cancer mug. My wife's favorite mug.
Oh, no.
You need to bring more back in. Cause the new square one, she won't drink out of. She needs the curved one.
We are due for, in fact, this year, I told my mom and Nicole, I'm like, we've got to do a rework of those mugs. Like, we've got to make them different and give people a reason to buy a new one. So send me a picture, because I don't remember what they look like.
We broke the curved one, which is why we now have a square one.
Okay, I'll have to dig back in my files and see if I can find it.
They're in there. I have the, I think maybe the original white tall porcelain mug or whatever.
Those were actually nice. I mean,
those are good.
Artwork aside, it was just a good, stout, you know, high capacity mug.
And for whatever reason, because I do have the smaller one that came out after that, they're slightly shorter, and that ink has scratched off and the original one hasn't.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I don't know why.
It's so weird sometimes with these companies that you get to make these marketing products. It's like sometimes they just nail it and other times they just produce crap. It's kind of odd. Well, that's a bummer.
I'll send you a picture of a mug I have that's a similar style, but it's going to say John's Mansville on it.
That's fine.
And also, if you do fly into New York when you go into Boston, I'll show you where you can buy a really cool Ruth Bader Ginsburg mug.
Oh, okay. That sounds fantastic.
I think if you look at Scott Johnson's stuff, I think his TMS mugs are the same style as your original Woodworkers Fighter Cancer mugs. Ooh, I think.
Okay, I'll take a look.
Yeah.
Frogpants.com.
Yeah.
Let's give a shout out to Scott.
Absolutely. He deserves it. But with that plug for a show that's completely unrelated, that just about wraps up this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play Music. Is that still around?
Yes. Still a thing? Is it still around? I listen to it every single day.
Of course you do.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. They'll be sure to, then you'll be sure to never miss any one of our exciting episodes like this one. While you're there, leave us a review.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Woodworkers Association. If you like the show, be sure to visit modernwoodworkersassociation.com. You can follow the MWA on Twitter at MWA_national. If you like the MWA on Facebook, or follow MWA_podcast on Instagram, and you can send us pictures of your mugs.
That's indeed.
That so, made me laugh.
That's good. And so I'm Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop. I'm at SeanW78 on most social medias, or just look for my name on Facebook. You'll find me there.
And I am Diami Plotke of Penultimate Woodshop. You can find me really at modernwoodworkersassociation.com these days. And I am at Diami Plotke on the Twitter.
Should I go now?
Go for
yeah,
it.
Mark.
Oh. Okay. You can find me at thewoodwhisperer.com. And of course, Wood Whisper generally on any social platform, doing a lot more on Instagram these days. So follow me there. It'll make me happy.
All right. So go into the shop, get a die grinder, find something you built for cancer, and make it curvy.
There you go. Yeah, what does this all mean? I don't understand it. Is this like a radio show?
Yeah.
Yes.
But for your pocket.